If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Women Physicians Lead, hosted by Dr. Lisa Herbert, helps women physicians move from surviving to thriving in their personal and professional lives. Dr. Lisa shares leadership tips, burnout support, stress management strategies, and inspiration from women physicians who've made remarkable transitions into leadership roles. There's a fantastic episode that you should check out called Taking Care of Yourself During the Journey, about how women physicians can care for themselves while on their leadership journeys. Check out Women Physicians Lead on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Shakespeare said that our eyes are the windows to our souls. They are also the windows into our health. But I'm guessing that many of us don't really think about our eyes until there's a problem. And like so many health issues, though, prevention and early detection are important to keeping our eyes healthy. Hi, I'm Dr. Mitzi Crocover, and welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. I'm happy to bring today's guest to you. She's a skilled ophthalmologist and innovator. We're going to cover a wide range of topics, from common eye conditions that affect women to preventive measures and emerging treatments. We'll delve into conditions such as dry eye syndrome, cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, and even what to and what not to do with eye makeup. And just a reminder that the information presented is for educational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. But we do hope that if you find something here that inspires questions about your own health, you'll discuss those issues with your healthcare provider. And do make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. Rating us also truly helps us get noticed as well. I am delighted to welcome Dr. Ashley Prasett, who is one of New York City's leading ophthalmologists. She is an assistant professor of ophthalmology at the Weill Cornell School of Medicine, founder of Daily Practice Eye Care, which is a line of skincare products for the eyes. She is a spokesperson for the American Academy of Ophthalmology, and she is the ophthalmologist for the New York Rangers hockey team. So I am so excited to speak with you today, Ashley. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Terrific. I'm just going to start out. What does one do for the National Hockey League?
It sounds more glamorous than it truly is, to be honest, but it's a lot of fun. I'm Canadian, so I do love hockey, although I've lived in New York now for almost 7 years. And so what I do is I go to the training camp with the team, examine everybody's eyes, just make sure that they're seeing healthy and set for their year. And if any issues come up over the year, then they come in for further assessment as needed. But it's a lot of fun. And as a hockey fan, it's kind of a dream come true.
That does sound like fun. Well, we brought you here today to talk about something maybe a little bit more mundane, but certainly very important, and that is our eyes, especially when it comes to women's eyes and women's health. Mm-hmm. So I'll just ask the general question, what are some of the more common eye problems that maybe women are more likely to experience than men?
Yeah, you know, people are always surprised when I talk about this, but blindness and vision loss is somewhat of a gender issue because there's actually more women living with vision loss around the world than there are men. And we think there might be a few reasons for that. One, women naturally live longer than men do, and a lot of eye diseases are more common as we grow older. So we think that might account for more of the prevalence. But especially kind of across the world, women may have less access to healthcare as their male counterparts might, maybe less access to the household financials to be able to access that healthcare, and are often more responsible for being at home with the families who might not able to be able to go to appointments as much. And so blindness and vision loss really does then start to become a gendered issue, which is why it's so important that we're doing something like this to really get the word out about what these issues are and what we can do to help maintain vision for women.
Yeah, that's really important because, you know, again, you know, there's that whole adage about, you know, put your oxygen mask on first. And a lot of times as women, we don't always remember that. So going to get eye care is really key.
Yeah, so it's so important to get an eye exam, even if you don't think that you have any issue with your vision, because a lot of issues that can damage the vision over time are sometimes not apparent at first, but they can be picked up early on an eye exam. And the sooner these conditions are diagnosed, the better. And so that would be looking for things like cataract, glaucoma, macular degeneration. And I know we'll get into what some of those things mean and what we can do to prevent them. What I usually recommend is that when you're about 20 to 30, to have at least one eye exam, and at least to have an eye exam before the age of 40. And that would be recommended with an ophthalmologist to have a full medical exam of the eyes. So they can do things like test the vision, test the peripheral vision, the eye pressures, look at your pupils, and then do a full assessment of the front and the back of the eye, looking for any conditions or diseases. Once you pass at age 40, as you get closer to about 60 to 65, we usually recommend every 1 to 2 years to have an eye exam. Again, just being able to preemptively pick up some of those diseases that might cause damage to the vision as you get older.
And you were kind of alluding to a really important point, and that is to get a medical exam. So talk a little bit about the difference between an ophthalmologist, for example, and an optometrist.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I know patients can be confused by that. The terminology sounds so similar, and so it can sometimes not really understand what the difference between the types of exams are. So ophthalmologists are true medical doctors for the eye. So they perform medicine and surgery. So we go to medical school. We usually complete on average about 12 to 14 years of post-secondary education. So it's an extremely long time that we're in training for. But what we do is we look for any medical conditions and then can treat some of those conditions surgically to help improve the vision and to help maintain vision as people grow up. So that's why it's so important. Another thing that a lot of my patients find interesting is that sometimes by looking into the back of your eye, you can actually tell a lot about the rest of your total body health. So that's why it's so important to be seeing an ophthalmologist, because we can look for things like diabetes changes, high blood pressure, certain autoimmune conditions, hormonal changes. And so even by looking in your eyes, you can sometimes tell a lot about somebody's total body health. In contrast, an optometrist is somebody who's gone to optometry schools, so they're a doctor of optometry, and they're really great for doing primary medical exams for the eyes so they can diagnose and sometimes even treat some primary or early on medical conditions for the eyes. And they're really good at doing vision checks, so they can perform glasses prescriptions, contact lens prescriptions, and some general eye care. A lot of optometrists and ophthalmologists actually work closely together because they are so closely linked.
Sure. And you mentioned hormonal changes, so I think that most of us women are concerned about it in so many ways, but talk a little bit about how those hormonal changes affect women.
Yeah, I mean, it can affect your eyes in so many different ways. So even in terms of just your cycle, you know, even when you're a young woman and, you know, you're going through your kind of natural cycle, there can be changes in the health of the eyes in terms of how moisturized they are, because we know hormonal changes can affect dry eye. And that's especially true then when you get into menopause. With menopause, we see a big increase in dry eye disease in women. Women are much more likely to be affected by dry eye disease than men, especially as we get to that pre and then even postmenopausal area. And the reason being is just as the hormonal changes can affect other areas in the body, it can actually also affect the tear production for the eyes. So the eyes can get dry. And you can also develop some clogging of the oil glands which line the eyelashes. And those oil glands naturally produce an oil which moisturizes the eyes. And as we get older, that oil can become a bit more hardened. It doesn't flow as well. And that also contributes to the eyes becoming quite dry. Sometimes even in pregnancy and breastfeeding, you can actually have changes in your vision as well. We know, again, that hormonal changes can affect even the shape of the eye in the cornea. And the cornea is the kind of the clear cover layer of the eye. And so those hormonal changes can affect the shape. So we'll often have patients come in that are pregnant that are saying that they feel like their vision has changed. Luckily, that often goes back to normal once you've had the baby, but you can still have some persistence if you're breastfeeding afterwards. And that's why if anyone's considering doing, say, like a LASIK procedure, but they happen to be pregnant or breastfeeding, we often recommend that they wait at least 6 months to a year once they finish, just to make sure that the eye health is completely stabilized once those hormones have re-regulated.
I remember when, right after I had my second child, I had what was called an ocular migraine, which is not a change in vision per se, but I had these weird things that I saw and no pain. So I would assume that you also get those kinds of problems as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the eyes are so closely linked to the rest of the body health And so that's why, again, it's so important to be getting these regular eye exams. But you can have changes that can affect the brain, can affect the blood pressure, and then that actually transpires to your eyes, where it can feel like the vision is blurry, or as you described, you're getting an ocular migraine, which is where you're seeing these funny visual things. Mm-hmm. It's not coming from the eyes, it's actually coming from the brain. But the eyes are truly the window to the total body health, which is why if you have any of these vision changes, it's so important to see your ophthalmologist just to make sure that it's not the eyes themselves and then to figure out where else this might be coming from.
I'm so glad you said that. I really wanted to underline that point, so thank you. With respect to some of those changes that you talked about that are due to hormones, does taking estrogen, for example, help with that if you're taking it for other reasons such as hot flashes? And what are some other treatments for some of those symptoms?
Yeah, I feel like I could talk about dry eye for hours. This is weirdly a passion of mine, but it's because it is so prevalent and it's only increasing in prevalence. You know, there's so many reasons why eyes can get dry. Hormonal changes, of course, is one of the most common reasons why that can happen. We know that hormonal supplementation, as it helps elsewhere in the body, it can also help with the eyes. But we also have some very targeted, kind of specific things that I usually recommend to patients to help as well. The one thing I will say is that there are many reasons why eyes get dry. Hormonal changes is one. It's a lot of it has to do with the environment. So the air quality, the humidity in the air and the temperature, screen time as well, which is so difficult. I feel like we're all on screens 24/7 nowadays, no matter what we do. Medications that we take can also affect the eyes. So if you're on medications for, say, blood pressure, medications for depression or anxiety, those can affect the eyes and in terms of the dryness as well. So there's so many reasons why this can happen. So what I usually recommend to my patients is I tell everybody, just for general eye health, to do what I call the eye basics. So starting an eye care plan, just like you brush your teeth every night, you should be taking care of your eyes every day as well. So what I recommend is to start with things like artificial tears to help to moisturize. They're a nice kind of temporary way to get your eyes feeling more comfortable. Doing what's called a hot compress, which is where you can get an eye mask that you can microwave for a few seconds, or you can do it with a towel under hot water, and then just sitting with the hot compress over the closed eyelids to help soothe the eyes. But it can also help to soften that oil production that comes from the eyelashes, as I mentioned before. And when that oil flows, it can better help to hydrate the eyes. It feels amazing. It's just hard for people to get into the habit of doing that every night. But if you can and start to get into this habit of eye care, it does feel really good. And then also extremely important, and I'm kind of crazy about this, is you want to be washing around your closed eyelids and lashes every single day. The reason being is we go about our day-to-day environment. There's buildup of bacteria, dust, pollen, pollution in our environments, and it loves to sit on the eyelids and lashes, and it's sitting there just wreaks havoc on our eyes. And so by cleansing around your eyelids and lashes every single day, you can really improve how your eyes look and how they feel. So that's also really important. And again, I'm so surprised that people don't know that they should be taking care of their eyes in that way. And these are just basic things that you can do at home that can really help. If that's not enough, that's when we start to think about, say, some prescription therapies for dry eyes. So there's eye drops, which can help reduce inflammation on the surface of the eyes. They can help increase tear production, which can be really helpful for patients that are really suffering. So there's lots you can do. If you've tried some of those basics and it's not enough, then I definitely recommend speaking with your ophthalmologist to explore some other therapies that might work.
And I would also assume that you're also going to want to know if those basics aren't working, that there might be something else, that something like an autoimmune disease like Sjogren's syndrome, for example, mm-hmm. might be part of the problem.
Completely. Like, as we mentioned before, total body health really presents in the eyes frequently. And so certain autoimmune conditions, as you mentioned, like Sjogren's syndrome, sometimes lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, other auto kind of immune and inflammatory conditions that can occur in the body are really prevalent and can also affect the eyes. And so if you have inflammation elsewhere, it can show up in the tears. And then that inflammation does need to be treated. So exactly as you mentioned, if you've tried a few basics at home and it's not enough and you don't feel like you have to suffer, there's so much that can be offered. Just meet with your ophthalmologist and find the treatment plan that's going to be best for you and possibly explore some further investigations to really get to the root cause as to why your eyes are so dry.
So in addition to the discomfort and irritation, again, all puns intended, of having dry eye, there's some really significant consequences. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the most common symptom of dry eye disease is actually fluctuating vision. And the reason being is that your eyes need to be hydrated for you to see clearly through. And so if there's dry spots there, if your eyes are not well hydrated, then your vision is going to feel blurry. And it's a blurriness that often comes and goes, which can be really frustrating for people. And so that's why it's so important to have this treated. You know, dry eye disease is truly a disease. And I always talk to patients about that because it's not something that you have to suffer with. It's really something that can be treated, but you should meet with your ophthalmologist so that you can come up with a customized treatment plan that's going to be right for you based on your symptoms and signs of dry eye disease. So as I mentioned, the fluctuating vision can be one of the symptoms, the discomfort or irritation. Sometimes even itchy and red eyes can be a symptom of dry eye. It's also a symptom of allergy, and I know we've just come into allergy season. It just started to warm up in New York, and they're saying it's going to be really bad for pollen this year. I've already had a lot of patients come in with itchy, irritated eyes from allergies. So again, there's so many reasons why our eyes can look and feel a certain way, and it's all about getting to the root cause as to what's going on so that you can better treat it.
And moving on to other challenges of aging, and that's changing vision. Mm-hmm. And also, even if you're not aging, if you will, when should you be worried about your vision?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, as you get into, say, you're like 60s or so, it's really important every 1 to 2 years to be seen by an ophthalmologist for a general eye exam. The most common conditions that can affect our eyes as we get older are cataract. Cataract is a normal aging change of the lens that's inside the eye. It happens to all of us as we get older. We all develop cataract if we live long enough. With that being a natural aging change, that does affect the vision. What can happen is it makes your vision more blurry. It can make the quality of vision less clear. Often patients complain of difficulty driving, especially at nighttime. So they'll say there's glare, they just don't feel like they can see as well. And that starts to become a safety issue. We actually have many studies that show that by removing cataract, you not only improve vision, but you can decrease your risk of fall and decrease the risk of development of dementia. So again, this is why treating the vision can actually help your total body health and is so important for aging in a really healthy way. So again, it's not just about seeing well, it's about keeping you healthy as you get older. Another really common condition is something called glaucoma. Glaucoma is something that often patients don't have symptoms of, which is why it can be such a scary disease. Glaucoma is where you can sometimes have high pressures in the eyes that causes damage to the nerve. And the nerve is the cable that connects the eye to the brain. And if that gets damaged, unfortunately, that's not reversible. So that's why it's so important to have an exam to look for signs of glaucoma, because you might not know that you have this disease. And we can't reverse any damage that's been done to the nerve, but we can prevent it from getting worse, often by treating the eye pressures, which can be done with either eye drops, a laser, or as a last resort, a surgery.
And talk a little bit also about those age-related changes that happen. You know, I was nearsighted for most of my life, and then I had this one magic moment where, because my eyes were changing, I didn't need anything, right? So talk a little bit about what is technically called presbyopia and what we can do about that.
Yeah, so presbyopia, again, is a natural aging condition. I tell my patients, it's not that we're aging, it's that we're growing up. So it just happens to all of us.
I love that.
So everybody's growing up. And so what presbyopia is that inability to be able to focus up close. So when we're young, we're able to see far away and up close. And then as we get older, that up close ability for the eye's muscle to function starts to degenerate. And again, normal change of growing up. That usually happens in your mid-40s or so. And that's when people start to need reading glasses to help them to focus up close. Sometimes they'll hold things further away and that can help, or increasing the lighting can also be helpful. And then as we get older, the vision does continue to change and the prescriptions continue to change. Again, just a natural part of the eyes growing up. But what can happen is you develop those cataracts, and as early cataract occurs, it changes your glasses prescription. And sometimes people get this phenomenon, which is called second sight. So it sounds like that might have been what you had, where you have this glorious period of time where you're actually like, wow, I can see better without my glasses. But what happens is that the cataracts continue to grow, and then it just makes everything blurry. So again, that's why it's so important to be seen by your ophthalmologist so they can diagnose something like cataract. It might sound scary when you develop cataract, but as I mentioned, it's very common. Almost everybody in their lifetime develops them, and it can be fixed. Cataract is the world's leading cause of blindness, but it's a reversible blindness, and it's reversible with a surgery. And the surgery is very straightforward, and it can help you see better. And I always say to my patients, you know, you don't want to wait too long, because the worse the cataracts get, the harder the surgery is to do. So you kind of want to get it in the sweet spot in the middle. You don't want to operate too soon before you need something done, but you also don't want to wait too long until it becomes a complicated surgery for you. So once it's starting to affect your vision, and once your ophthalmologist says you're ready medically for a surgery, then that's a good reason to proceed with a surgery.
Now, my understanding is that cataracts, if not caused, are exacerbated by sunlight, so that maybe there's some things that we can do to prevent them or perhaps delay their progression.
Yeah, so we can't not get older. That's just naturally going to happen, and that's the leading cause of cataract. But you're right. We know sunlight can actually make cataracts worse, so UV protection is recommended to all my patients. So you can wear sunglasses that have that 100% UV. Healthy diet is really important as well. The best evidence that we have is for the Mediterranean diet in terms of eye health. So again, I recommend that to my patients too. Certain medications can sometimes make cataracts worse. Again, if you need to be on these medications for the rest of, you know, your total body health, say something like a steroid or medications, other medications that you might need, it is necessary to take them. But just knowing that that might be a reason why your cataracts are growing faster than the average cataract. So those are all things that are definitely important to consider. And then sometimes certain conditions like diabetes, so fluctuations in blood sugars or extremely high blood sugars, can also cause cataracts to come on sooner than anticipated.
You're making a great point, because we know that the Mediterranean diet, for example, can help with heart disease and diabetes. You just talked about controlling diabetes. So it's, I think, a great advertisement for just doing those very key things that we know we should be doing, and it has such large implications.
Exactly.
Talking a little bit more about vision, there's a number of, I guess there's one supplement, lutein, that has been promoted as an eye health supplement. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there was a big research study that was called AREDS, A-R-E-D-S, and then its sister study, which was done a few years later, called AREDS2. And they found that there were certain vitamins that can be beneficial for eye health. This is especially true in people who have a condition called macular degeneration. This is another condition of older age which can occur. So macular degeneration is where you can get deposition in the macula, which is the central part of your vision in the back of your eye and your retina, of something called drusen. And drusen are kind of these deposits that can occur as we get older. Because they sit in the central part of the vision, it can cause blur and haziness in your central vision. So unfortunately, macular degeneration, the majority of it is genetic, genetic and age-related. We do know that there's some things that can make macular degeneration worse or increase your risk for it. The biggest risk is smoking. Mm-hmm. That's why I know there's many reasons not to smoke, but another reason not to smoke would be for your vision. So we know smoking can make this macular degeneration significantly worse. Healthy diet, as I mentioned, is really important. And these supplements, as you mentioned, like lutein, vitamin A, vitamin E, zeaxanthin, the components in this AREDS vitamin that has been created, is, again, very important for maintaining eye health. And then lastly, UV protection as well, we know can also be beneficial. We can't change our genetics. We can't change growing up and getting older. But those few things that we can change are definitely worth modifying.
Sure. And again, before we leave vision, talk a little bit about what LASIK is and who it's useful for and perhaps who it is not useful for.
Yeah, that's a great question. LASIK is one of my favorite surgeries to perform. I had it done when I was in medical school. I'm very happy that I did it. And I do it for patients all the time now. LASIK is one type of vision correction surgery. There's a few different types. There's another form called PRK, another form called SMILE. There's something called EVO, which is an implantable lens inside the eye. So there's many ways to correct the vision. This can be really great for people who don't want to have to be so dependent on their glasses and contact lenses. So I always say the first step, if you're interested in maybe getting out of your prescriptions, is to meet with an ophthalmologist to see if you're a good candidate. Because based on your prescription and based on your eye shape and your eye health, they can recommend which type of vision correction is going to be best for you. And then one thing to know is that, again, as we get into those mid-40s, that presbyopia or that nearsighted vision, mm-hmm. being able to see up close, is going to start to decline. So what these vision correction surgeries do is they help it so that you can see far away. But often as you get into your mid-40s, naturally your vision is going to start to change year after year. So I always think it's beneficial to actually do these vision correction surgeries sooner than later so that you can get more years glasses free. When you're in your mid-40s, it's definitely still something that can be an option, just knowing that, again, as you grow up, the vision is going to continue to get worse. Now, there's a different type of laser that patients often kind of get confused about because sometimes they'll hear laser in the context of a cataract surgery. So there's also a type of laser that can be done during cataract surgery to help break up the cataract and fix small amounts of astigmatism to improve the quality of your vision and to really help make sure that the cataract surgery itself is safe. That's a different type of laser than LASIK, which is done when, you know, you want to correct vision when you're younger. But it's another great way that a laser can assist in performing a surgery to make it extremely accurate and customized.
So I won't go into all those details because obviously this is a conversation you want to have with your own ophthalmologist about all your options. Would you say that most ophthalmologists, however, that are doing surgery know about these? And how would a patient know to feel comfortable that their doctor is as up-to-date as you, for example?
Yeah, that's a good question. So most ophthalmologists that perform these vision correction surgeries often have a fellowship or an extra year of training in what's called refractive surgery or vision correction surgery. So you can always ask the ophthalmologist you're seeing if they are fellowship trained in refractive surgery, and then you can always access the American Academy of Ophthalmology website as well for more information about these types of surgeries, just to verify that this is something that you'd want to proceed with.
That's really helpful. And before we get into the fun stuff, which is beauty and appearance and all of that, a couple of really quick questions. There's been, obviously, in the news reports about eye drops that have caused blindness and even death. Can you talk a little bit about that and how consumers can best protect themselves?
This has really been something that's rocked the ophthalmology world and the eye care world. This is an extremely rare thing to happen. This was one or two specific companies that unfortunately had a contaminant of a bacteria called Pseudomonas. And why this was so devastating is this type of bacteria, this strain of Pseudomonas, is resistant to many antibiotics that we use to treat it. We commonly see Pseudomonas as an infection that can occur in contact lenses or people that maybe sleep in their contacts or aren't having good hygiene with their contacts, and it's generally treatable with antibiotic eye drops. Unfortunately, this outbreak that occurred in a specific brand of eye drops that was resistant to bacteria, and that's why, unfortunately, there's been so many devastating effects from it, from vision loss to even loss of eye to loss of life, which is extremely rare. What I'd like to kind of explain to people is that there's many drops that are safe to be using. What I would recommend doing is looking up these specific brands that have been associated with this outbreak, and if you have these brands of eye drops in your home, to discard of them immediately. It's always safest to be using artificial tears that come in single vials that are preservative-free. The single vial means that you use it once as soon as it's been opened, and then you discard it. Really important never to leave the cap off of any bottle forms of artificial tears that you have. If you think it's been contaminated, definitely discard it. If it's past its expiration date, definitely discard it. So just good hygiene habits around the drops that we're using in our eyes as well.
You talked a little bit before about screen time. Discuss how screens affect our vision and our eye health, and perhaps what we can do and what we can tell our children to do to save their eyes.
Yeah, I know. It's so hard to give up screen time. I feel like it's our entire worlds now. So the big issue with screen time is when we're staring at screens, we blink less because we're focusing so much. And that lack of blinking tends to dry out the eyes. And so the vision can then get blurry, the eyes can get irritated and red and uncomfortable. And so that can kind of lead again to that dryness that we were discussing earlier in our discussion. And so what I usually recommend for screen time is something that's called the 20-20-20 rule. So every 20 minutes, take a 20-second break and look 20 feet away. That relaxes your eyes so that they're not straining so much looking up close for so long. It gives your eyes some time to blink, to focus before going back to your work. So that's one strategy that can be helpful. Using artificial tears if you're on a computer for long hours can also be helpful just to help moisturize the eyes. And then using an anti-glare screen for your cover for your screen can be helpful too. A lot of people will ask me about the blue light blocking glasses, and this is a little controversial because there was a big study that came out just I think a couple years ago that showed no benefit of the blue light blocking. And I think it's a great marketing tool, but there really isn't evidence behind it. So what I'll say to my patients is if you have a pair and you think that they help, there's no harm in using it, but the studies have shown no benefit to using them. So don't spend your money. Instead, spend your money on things that we know are going to be helpful. Things like maybe a glare protector cover for the screen, using artificial tears, and then just as best as you can, take breaks.
Well, and this goes to my daughter, who I won't name, but I think that there is a feeling that if you have those glasses, then you're protected and you can, you know, stay longer. So I think that that's also kind of the downside. So thank you for talking to us about that. And one other question that I want to talk about, alluding to what we started out talking about, and that's the differences in men and women with respect to eyes. You know, I've talked with a number of folks from scientists who are dealing with inflammation to, you know, pretty much any other subspecialty and specialty, and that is that we're now learning about sex as a biological variable with respect to even changes at the cellular level. Mm-hmm. What are we finding in ophthalmology, for example?
Yeah, I think the hormonal changes and how that affects the body is so important. You know, women's bodies are on a 28-day cycle, not a 24-hour cycle. And that's always something that's really important to remember and to know that things can change and fluctuate, not on a day-to-day basis, but maybe on a monthly basis mm-hmm. for you. So that's one thing to know. The other thing is that autoimmune conditions are much more common in women than they are in men. And knowing that autoimmune conditions can affect the health of the eyes, if you think you might be suffering from an autoimmune condition, it's so important to get your eyes examined, even just to have that as a baseline so that you know if there's any change to your eye health going forward.
Absolutely. So shifting topics a little bit, you have a line of products for the skin around the eyes and probably more. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this really all came about because so many of my patients would ask me, well, what can I use around my eyes that's going to be science-backed but safe? And there really wasn't anything on the market that I felt comfortable recommending. So it came out really from just my own patients asking for what they can do. And so what I did is I paired with an organic chemist that was working in a lab here in the U.S. And we created my first product, which is called Eye Revive. So I talked a little bit about the importance of one, cleansing around the eye area to keep mm-hmm. your eyes healthy, and two, keeping that skin moisturized, because again, that's going to help with how your eyes look and how your eyes feel. So the first product that I created, this Eye Revive, is a cleanser that also helps to hydrate and brighten the eye area. And it can be found on our website. It's called www.dailypractice.com. And my company is called Daily Practice because I really want people to make it a part of their daily practice to take care of their eyes, just like you take care of the rest of your health. And so we're going to be coming out with more products soon that are all for the eye area, but everything is organic. It's science-backed, very well clinically tested, especially if you have a lot of sensitivities or prone to irritation. You can feel very comfortable that this is going to be safe for around the eye area.
That's terrific. And you mentioned that what inspired you to do that is that you didn't like what was on the market already. What are some of the things that you don't like about, say, the eye creams that are already on the market?
Yeah, you have to be careful because the cosmetics industry is actually very poorly regulated. So we have many, many ingredients that are banned in cosmetics globally, and there's less than 10 ingredients that are banned in cosmetics within the U.S. And so because it's a poorly regulated industry, you have to be careful about the quality of the products that you're using on your face and the personal care products you use, but especially when it comes to your eyes. I see all of the eye irritation, the eye infections, the allergic reactions to these products that people develop. And that's why it was so important to me to create something that I knew was going to be safe for my patients to use. So again, things that you want to be looking out for are certain preservatives like parabens. There's some preservatives as well that can cause a lot of sensitivities and toxicities. So you want to look for products that are either ophthalmologist tested or dermatology tested, especially for sensitive skin, because that means they've actually gone through the process of testing their products to ensure that they're going to be tolerated around the eye area. And never use products that aren't formulated for the eye area around your eyes. So patients would say to me they were looking for a good cleanser for the eye area before mine came out, and they would be using things like shampoo or baby shampoo on their eyes, thinking, well, it doesn't sting. It's a shampoo. It should cleanse. And that's not what you want to be doing. It's not formulated for the eye area. It's going to dry the skin. It's going to dry the eyes, which is going to lead to more problems in the future. So really only pick products that are ophthalmologist tested that are formulated for your eye area.
And along with the eye creams, what about eye makeup? What are the guidelines with respect to what you should be looking for in eye makeup? And also, how long can you keep it?
Yeah. Everybody has like that one eyeshadow they've had for 10 years that's still sitting in their makeup bag that they pull out for special occasions. So, I mean, we're all guilty of doing it. So I have a couple recommendations for eye makeup. So my big eye makeup no-nos are, one, waterproof makeup. The reason being is that it's so hard to take off, and what ends up happening is you rub your eyelid skin extremely hard, and it can cause loss of eyelashes and also can cause that skin to wrinkle and get really kind of lax and irritated as you get older as well. So really important, I say, avoid any waterproof makeup if you can. The second thing is to avoid doing what's called tight lining of your eyelids. So that's where you line with eyeliner or makeup the inner part of your eyelid, which sits right next to the eyeball. That's actually where the opening of those oil glands exist. So you're going to clog those up with makeup, which can lead to eye irritation and dryness. And also the particles that are in the makeup can get onto the eyeball and they can stick there and cause a lot of irritation, scratches, and infections. My third tip is no glitter. Glitter gets everywhere. The amount of times I've seen glitter particles stuck to eyeballs and irritation, again, it happens a lot. So try to avoid glitter if you can.
Terrific. And then again, how long can we keep that special eye makeup?
Yeah, it's different. I say on average about, it's different for each product. For mascara, I say about 3 to 6 months, again, because that's something that's going right close to the lashes where that bacteria loves to sit. So after at least 6 months, you should probably be tossing it and getting a new one. Eyeshadows can be used a little bit longer, about 6 months to a year. And again, it really has to do with how you're using these products too. You want to make sure that you're capping them. You're not leaving anything sitting out. If you happen to touch something that's not clean, again, get rid of it. If you happen to develop an eye infection, just toss all of your makeup. The reason being is that eye infections, especially viral eye infections, are very, very contagious. And so you can recontaminate yourself if you're using the same products. So just make sure you're keeping things clean as possible and then getting rid of them generally about every 6 months to a year.
Okay. I try to remember in January and I just kind of, you know, do a little ceremony thanking the eye makeup and throwing it away.
Yeah, there'll always be a new one and you'll be happy.
And then talk a little bit, if you would, about the lash serums. I've always been a little bit questioning about if something's grow, you know, causes it to grow. Is that a good thing?
Yeah. So the lash serums, they really do work. Okay, so that's always people's first question. Does it work? Yes, it does. But it comes with side effects, just like anything that we're likely going to do. So the last Sharums actually came about. It was a glaucoma eye drop. And we noticed that a side effect of the glaucoma eye drop was that people's lashes were growing really long and thick. And they remarketed that glaucoma eye medication as a lash serum. And that's Latisse. Latisse is the only FDA-approved lash serum, but there's many cosmetic-grade lash serums that also exist. And that goes in part to show you how unregulated the cosmetics industry can be. You don't actually need FDA approval to launch a cosmetic product. So the active ingredient in the medicine is called prostaglandin, and there's also analogs or related medicines similar to prostaglandin. So if you see prostaglandin or prostaglandin analog or PGA, that means it has that active ingredient in the lash serum. It really causes the lashes to grow long and thick, but that also causes dry eye. It also causes clogging of the oil glands which line the lashes, which is called meibomian gland dysfunction. It causes you to develop styes, sometimes can lead to infections, eye redness, and irritation. So if that's not enough of a reason to maybe avoid using some of these products, the most worrisome side effect is actually something called periorbital fat atrophy. It's basically a fancy term for the loss of fat that is in and around your eyes. And there's nothing that ages you more than not having fat around your eyes because that causes them to look sunken in. And so if you chronically use these lash serums, I'm talking about for months to years, you will have loss of that nice fat that gives you that youthful appearance, and your eyes will appear very sunken in. Now, luckily, most of these things can actually be reversed when you stop these medications. It doesn't actually cause destruction of those fat cells. It just causes them to shrink. So sometimes you can get some of that fat to come back. But many of my patients say that they feel like it just never looks the same as it did as before they started these. It can also cause darkening of the iris, which is the colored part of your eye, and darkening of the eyelid skin. So you have to be really careful in applying it. Now, what I'll tell my patients is, if you want to use it for a specific event, like say if you have a wedding coming up or an event that you're going to, or if you're like traveling and you don't want to have to bring all your makeup with you and you want to try the product, I'm okay if you do it for like a couple months. The life cycle of the eyelash is about 2 months, so it'll take about 6 to 8 weeks for you to get full benefit from using the serum itself. But you don't want to be using it chronically, so it's not something that you use every day for months to years. But if you want to try it once in a while, I'm okay with that, knowing that those are some side effects and you might develop, say, like a stye or irritation from it.
That's really important information. And mascara is looking better and better to me all the time.
Yeah.
Not again, waterproof.
Exactly. Not the waterproof, but general mascara. The other thing that's important is just keeping your eyelashes hydrated and moisturized. And that's where doing a daily cleanser, like the Eye Revive, which I created, which has natural moisturizers in it, is actually going to help the natural appearance of your lashes. Because by cleansing away that bacteria and then leaving the lashes moisturized, you're just going to promote natural growth of your lashes. And that's what some of these serums that say have castor oil or just organic ingredients in them have. It's just moisturizing your lashes. So if you just take care of your eyelids and lashes every day, you'll probably find that your eyes look better and your lashes are just naturally growing longer anyway.
That sounds like a good plan to me. Before I let you go, is there anything I didn't ask you that you think is important for our listeners to know?
Yeah, the one thing that I would say is that, you know, we've talked a lot about the importance of getting an eye exam. And if anybody feels like they're worried about the cost of getting an eye exam or they're not able to access that, just know that the American Academy of Ophthalmology has a service which is called Eye Care America. And they'll provide free eye exams. It's a program that's run by them for patients over the age of 65. Or younger if you're at risk for a certain eye condition. So say if you have a family history of glaucoma, or if you have diabetes and need to have your eyes examined to make sure that your vision stays healthy. So don't feel like you can't see an ophthalmologist. There are ways that you can see somebody, even if you don't have access to it. So check out the American Academy of Ophthalmology website, and the program is called Eye Care America.
Such important information, and we will have those links in our podcast notes. So thank you for that, and thank you to the American Academy. Dr. Ashley Prasad, this has been a wonderful conversation. I have learned so much. Thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thanks for letting me talk about it. As I mentioned, I feel like I could talk about eye care for hours on end. So if anyone has any more questions, like, feel free to access the American Academy of Ophthalmology. They have great resources on their website as well.
Thank you so much. This was a full episode, and I know that if you've stayed with us till the end, you've learned a lot about eye health. What I'd like to leave you with is to encourage you to get that eye exam, practice healthy habits that can also be beneficial to your eyes, like a Mediterranean diet and avoiding smoking, and take regular breaks from screens every 20 minutes so you can blink and rest your eyes. Our website at beyondthepapergown.com will have an article on eye health, and while you're there, I encourage you to sign up for our newsletter so that you can keep up to date about new episodes, articles, and events. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks, as always, for listening, and be well. Our episode was produced by Patrick Shambayati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.